Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
What most people think.
Hello and welcome to episode 61 of What Most People Think. How are you doing, eh? It's beginning to look a lot like another fucking lockdown. Anyway, we'll get on to all that nonsense shortly. This is another one of those weeks where I had to squeeze this podcast out. This is where the Patreon comes in so handy because I was supposed to be off work this week and then I took a little writing job Monday, then another one Tuesday, another one Wednesday. You know what the missus is like? You're supposed to be off this week. I was like, babe, we're going to have Thursday and Friday. Absolutely family time guaranteed. Good thing is, she said, well, can you not miss the podcast 1 week? I'm like, babe, I've got clients. Do you know what I mean? I've got clients, babe. They can't be left just with mainstream topical comedy. I'm not going to do that to the patrons and the listeners to What Most People Think. Anyway, I don't know how your week's been, man. I've been a bit quiet on social media the last couple of weeks. One, because this thing happens every once in a while that I just find Twitter a bit ridiculous. I don't know what it is. It's like if you actually pierce the kind of artifice of the whole thing, it's a lot of grown-ups telling each other off and just wanting to be proved right in the fullness of time. But also, it's the most sanctimonious week I've ever heard on Twitter. The most self-righteous. I think this is beyond virtue signalling. I think self-righteousness made a return, particularly over the free school meals thing, which just, I mean, like, the one thing I did find odd was like people saying, right, I'm gonna go out and I'm gonna fund free school meals myself. I'm gonna deliver them myself. And I thought, that's fantastic, brilliant. Well, you know, well done you. That's not just virtue signaling, you're actually going to do something about it. And then people go, yeah, and just give a big two fingers to Boris. I was like, I'm not sure you fully researched conservatism, actually, because I think that is exactly the end goal of the conservative dream, is that the state back out of doing something and people sort of chip in themselves. Listen, I always welcome the patrons. We got some £10 patrons and a couple of people that haven't had their shout out from before. We got Robbie Tate. Now, Robbie, you're sounding to me like a mid-90s Middlesbrough midfielder. Was there a player called that? Are you him? Are you he? We got Rodri Owen. He's just being as Welsh as he can be. Rodri Owen. Yeah, it's a hard accent, that Welsh one. It can become Indian really easily. Steve Gray sounds like a Crystal Palace midfielder, again from the mid-90s. Was that Andy Graham thinking of? Graham Reid definitely opened the batting for Kent in the 80s. Asija, sorry if you've got your name, the pronunciation wrong, Asija, but you've been a VIP patron for a while, and I'm sorry that the shout was late coming. And that, this goes to everybody. If you've been a patron for a while and you haven't had your shout out, either message me through the Patreon site or whatmostpeoplethinkuk@gmail.com. Andrew Hempstead. Andy Hempstead. You like smoking weed there, do you? Yeah, is that a nickname? Andy Hempstead. He only got into it in his late 30s and he's just been absolutely smashed throughout lockdown. Did you see that thing that said that substance abuse has gone up during lockdown? No shit, Sherlock. That's why people do loads of fucking heroin in like Siberia. I think I just made that up. Anyway, this week for Patreon, I am, hopefully by the time this goes out, I am dropping the biggest thing I've ever dropped on Patreon. You're going to keep saying dropped, Jeff. Yeah, I am, because I'm 43 and I can pull off that sort of words. Is the full 20-minute set from lockdown. So if you'd have seen it on social media, there was that stuff that I did about, you know, people walking around with their T-shirts over their mouth and, you know, old people kind of standing against the wall. That set, the whole thing, the whole 20-minute set, only for patrons. All tiers are in on this one. There is a VIP benefit coming up very soon, which I'll be telling you about next week. And it's just as a thank you. Do you know what I mean? I know things are a bit grim at the moment. I thought, fuck it. You know, there's not much kind of stand up on television at the moment anyway. And I thought you might enjoy it. So you can get involved with that if you want to join the Patreon, and you can access all the exclusive content that I've put there from before. Now, the cuss count. David Domain, are you listening? Because I didn't hear from you this week. And the main thing is, I'm just, are you all right? Have I done something to piss you off, David? Or are you sick? I mean, has the COVID? Has the COVID got David? Just email me. I mean, I'm not, you know, you don't have to, you do this out of the goodness of your heart, and I appreciate it, but I just want to know that you're all right, mate. And it does make me think that we can't always rely on David Domain. He's out there having an awesome name, David Domain. We need cover if he has to call in sick. So we perhaps need some sort of rota here. So if you are interested in cuss count related, in unpaid swearing work, I would say that me and Mark, I'm just going to guess that I had 30 fuckings last week. I think Mark probably had 6. Mark Nelson. Thanks, by the way, for all the feedback about the Mark Nelson episode. I know that a lot of people like the ones with guests, but I really do try and pick and choose like who comes on, because as you can imagine, with the comedy circuit being like it is, not everyone's going to be right for the podcast. You know what I mean? Like I've had loads of lefties on, but it's a certain kind of lefty. I don't know if Mark would necessarily fully call himself a lefty, but it's really interesting. And you know, yeah, as a couple of you pointed out, I am massively ignorant about Scottish politics, but in a way that was partly why I had him on. This week we're going to be talking about the new national lockdown. So as I'm recording this, there's news breaking, right? So I was going to talk about other stuff, but the news has moved on. So I'm going to talk about the new national lockdowns across Europe and what might happen here. We're going to talk about Corbyn and the shocking finding that the Corbynistas were a little bit anti-Semitic. I mean, I don't know about you, I didn't see that one coming. We're going to talk about male teachers in school, and we're going to, or the lack of them, the declining. As Sam Smith said, another particularly stupid thing this week. If we've got time, a little bit of men's mental health, and then a couple of letters and out. Just a quick thank you to the game Star Wars Squadron on PlayStation 4. I've been playing it with my son. It's basically the game that we've both wanted for a while. We just want to fly X-Wings around and shoot stuff. But he started using the word killed. Like, Daddy, I killed that man. I was sort of thinking, this isn't probably cool, like, given his age. I've probably put myself right in it now, because I think that game has got a PEGI rating a lot higher than his age. He's 12. I've just remembered my son is 12 and not 4. And he so I said to him, like, son, he blew up the ship, and he said, Daddy, I killed that man. I said, son, maybe don't use killed. It's a bit brutal and a bit final. He went, okay, Daddy, I made that man be dead. I was like, good. I like what you've done there. You want to keep it dark? You keep it dark, son. And a fuck you this week to the people that go somewhere and evidently haven't been out much at all during this year, and like it's slightly empty, and they're like, oh my God, I'm going to take a photo and post it online. I'm on this train. It's normally quite busy and it's not busy. I'm like, has it taken you to the end of October to work out the devastating economic effects of lockdown in terms of footfall and just, you know, the economy? Because I just, you know, and they've always got their masks on. They look like slightly self-righteous about the fact that they're wearing a mask. That cafe that you love, that train, right? That restaurant, that pub. Yeah, newsflash, it's all slightly less busy than it was. So the fact that you aren't aware of that, maybe you're part of the problem. So as you're probably aware, the lockdowns, quite strict lockdowns, coming in across major European nations. They've gone for one in France. They've gone. They're going right up to the end of November. Gone till November. They're giving it the old Wyclef Jean. the Germans have gone for a slightly less, you know, more sort of pragmatic one. And you know, this thing seems to be coming in. You know, one thing it does kind of clarify is whether you believe in them or not. The old 2-week circuit breaker was never really a thing, was it? I mean, it kind of came, you know, how convenient. We could just tie it in with half term, just 2 weeks. Look, whatever your argument is, it, apparently it's evident. It's either something more significant or nothing at all. And of course, now we've got the same debates happening, you know. And I heard this woman on the radio who was like a scientist, and she was saying, well, you know, you just have a 4-week one now and then maybe a short one in January. And it was almost like she was talking about like a little cheeky mini break to European sea. Yeah, no, we really like to get away in November. Then we're like a cheeky little get another one in January, and then we're probably all right to the Easter. Look, I try to be respectful about this discussion. I think that you have the lockdownists and the Remain Openerists. We don't really have good words for it yet, evidently. And on this occasion, I do find myself surprised to be a Remainer. I'm a Remain Openerist, I'm balanced. But, you know, you have to accept that the other side have an argument. You know what I mean? Even if you disagree, there is an argument, right? Is that, you know, on the one hand, if you don't lock down, there'll be rising hospitalizations, infections, you know, COVID-related deaths, you know, depending on how you think those are logged, and then mental health issues from people being scared of dying. And then on the other hand, it's pretty much the same, but it just takes longer. People die, people get really poor. There'll be no fucking, you know, there'll be no fun until June 2021. You know, it's quite a serious thing to be asking a nation to do. So there are strong arguments on either side, you know, but I do think that I just object to the idea that there's this magical silver bullet. You know, so all right, we go into some sort of lockdown in November. These things get momentum, right? It's probably something's going to happen. And then we come out again, what, for Christmas? And then it rises again. And then it shuts again. I mean, there's no obvious... I mean, the thing about the vaccines is that it's not like the flu vaccine gets taken once and then it's done. The flu vaccine has to be readministered forever. It's a thing that's in circulation forever. You know, so the talk of the vaccine as a way of offsetting this is, on the other hand, we do have some positive news coming out of AstraZeneca. And look, I'd love to believe that we can just give everyone one jab and then everything will go back to normal. But the question comes back down to not whether or not we just have to find a way of living with this thing that is circulating. And you know, it also brings in this argument that Remainers had about the impact on young people, right? Now, I think in terms of employment, obviously it's going to devastate people that have just come out of university and stuff. I mean, that is absolutely savage. But I believe that new jobs will happen. I mean, whether or not they're the kind of jobs young people want, do you know what I mean? I mean, I just think every, you know, virtually anyone under the age of 25 will be involved in serving food or drink to someone. It'll be like doing a national service, won't it? You just have to work for like Just Eat or something. Because that'll be how we all get our food. It'll just be young people just bringing the things that middle-aged, middle-class people want to their house. But what I worry about is that they'll get jobs eventually, I think. I think the economy will recover. But it's the stuff that goes in the meantime, isn't it? It's all the cool stuff, the kind of stuff that helps you, you know, enjoy or have a rich lived experience. You know, concerts, gigs, nightclubs, restaurants, pubs. I mean, opening a nightclub in 2020, this is the problem with nightclubs shut, is opening one in 2020 is not the same proposition as it was. I mean, back in the 90s when all the super clubs were opening, do you know what I mean? Just had to have some twat, you know, with a coke addiction and an inheritance. It's generally all it needed. In 2020, with the health and the safety and all the different licenses and all the kind of drug compliance and, you know, like people having to have their passports screenshotted for terrorism screen... I mean, it's not a great proposition. So now, when nightclubs shut, I just don't think that they get replaced at all. And the other thing that I don't think people have fully understood on the liberal left kind of like lockdownist side is they're like, you know, this will provide certainty for business, you know, because they'll know that once we do this, we can fully get back to normal. And I think you're missing a point that businesses have got into a business partly because they quite like doing it. Do you know what I mean? They like, you know, if you own a cafe, they like opening up in the morning, bringing the shutters up, seeing your regulars, you know what I mean? Selling some fucking bacon rolls, you know, maybe the odd sort of vegan breakfast, but, you know, they have it on the menu, but that's just to get people in the door. Once you're in there, you have a proper breakfast, right? And providing entertainment, I'm sorry, employment. That'd be a weird cafe, would it? Providing entertainment. Yeah, can I have eggs, sausage, beans, mushrooms and a little bloke with a ukulele. Yeah, coming right up there, sir. It's all right, we'll bring the ukulele fellow over to you.
What most people think.
I just think that this is my worry about any kind of second lockdown is that the businesses that kind of sucks it up the first time round, what you're going to see, I think you're going to see a rate of closure and redundancies that are much, much more because you just lose your bottle, do you? You just kind of go, how fucking is the energy that it takes for things to happen, isn't it? I remember it's like, it's almost like, do you remember the first plane went into the World Trade? This is the worst. I just lost my three American listeners. But like, do you remember the first plane went in? It was on the news. It was shocking and all that. And then the second one went in. Everyone's like, okay, this is fucking bad. Everything has changed now. And I remember with the London attacks. Remember the tube attack? Londoners did great, right? The following day, people are like, you've almost went back to like the blitz period. You won't be stopping me going into work on the Circle Line. I'll tell you that much, Mr. Jihadist. And then 10 days later, there was another scare, wasn't there? I don't know if you remember. It ended up on a shootout on a on a roof. There was some geezer in his pants. I'm just remembering this now. Was this a weird cheese dream? Some geezer in his pants, and he was being he had sort of like loads of markers, like red markers on his head from the guns trained on him. And I remember thinking about that bloke with these terrorists and stuff. They're never good looking lads, are they? Really? You never. It's the same as when you get the college shooters, isn't it? In the first time you see the image, you go, I can see why he was a bit fucked off with the world. He's got to his early 20s. He's looked in the mirror. He's going, well, I'm always going to be a virgin. On that note, I mean, this is grim stuff. As I'm doing this, the news is coming out about the terrorist attacks in Nice. And I just think, like, what I find odd, this is another odd thing. Maybe this will go into the next subject on the EHRC report on the Labour Party, is that what this is coming from, these wave of jihadist attacks, is because people are saying that you shouldn't be allowed to publish something that they find offensive within their religion. And like, this is a free speech. I mean, this couldn't be more bluntly a free speech issue. And it's so worrying, the silence on that issue that you see coming out of large parts of the left. They're happy to condemn the attacks. Oh, really? What, you think people getting, a woman getting fucking beheaded in a church is bad? Well, that just makes you a human being, all right? What you've got to say is, what I think is that this is so fundamental, the idea that people aren't allowed to say something. And we see, it's the most extreme end of the free speech argument, but it kind of crystallizes some of the fears people have on the left about speaking out on certain issues, because they think, I don't know what their fear is. Do they just not believe in free speech anymore, and they're kind of embarrassed about it? You know what I mean? You know, like when you've gone off something, like when you're a kid. Do you ever have that when you go around your family's house and there was this thing that you always loved, you know, and your auntie keeps being, oh, here you go, I bought you out the after 8 mince. Oh, he loves the after 8 mince. I remember when he was 8, we gave them to him for the first time, and he ate the old box. He was sick, but we kept giving them to him. That's what I think some people on the left are like with free speech. Fuck, you know.
What most people think.
We had the EHRC report about anti-Semitism in the Labour Party, and there's some pretty damning findings, one of which was of the political interference from the leader of the opposition's office, which is Jeremy Corbyn's office, 23 occasions that they had intervened. And I don't think that they were intervening in a good way, do you? Just going like, you know, I was intervening. No, we were just so keen for justice to be done, actually. If anything, we were probably too keen on anti-Semitism to be eradicated. And it does seem like pretty strong findings, you know. So it was all a real shock, isn't it? And immediately I went on Twitter just to see how some of the kind of staunch Corbynistas are handling it. And they took it really well, as you'd expect, given that they somehow think that Jeremy Corbyn has always been on the right side of history. I think he's finally, just was slightly the wrong side of the fence on this one, lads. But they were all like, oh, the EHRC are just packed with Tories and probably to do with fucking Mossad and just Israel. That's what they really want to do, isn't it? They just want to get to the point where they can say Israel, free Palestine. And look, the whole point is like, it's weird because I'm reluctant to make too many jokes about this because it's pretty grim, isn't it? Like a political party that is predicated on the idea of fairness and anti-racism have been found guilty of some very funky stuff. Funky stuff, Jeff? Is that what you see anti-Semitism as? Racism. This is what, again, we come back to this point. Why is anti-Semitism? It's got this special, not entirely racist thing, when actually in our recent past, it's got one of the most fucking cut and dry examples of really bad racism, which is the Holocaust. You know, it's dangerous, isn't it, to think of yourself as the good guys? Because if you just think, oh, I'm one of the good guys, then what can you do? You can do worse stuff. I mean, the Tories, and I'm sure that the Tories will eventually have their own investigation into Islamophobia. And there's absolutely no doubt that there's like the further right elements of the Tory party, that there are racists there. Of course there are. But yeah, when you think you're the good guy, right, or you imagine that your brand is based around being a nice person, and fuck it, old Nicholas. There's probably some people now going, oh, what a surprise, he's brought it back round to Nicola Sturgeon. I just got to say, man, I don't know if you saw, there was a briefing the other day where she was saying that they had basically eradicated coronavirus from Scotland and it was really at other parts of the UK, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, with a land border, perhaps, that had brought it in. And she was just lying, man. She was straight up fucking lying. And I just, it's just okay to be, she was just, if that had been one of like the strongmen leaders like Bolsonaro, Erdogan or Trump, imagine the same thing of Trump going, yeah, we'd pretty much, we'd eradicated coronavirus and people brought it in from, you guessed it, Mexico. I mean, like a straight up racist. That'd be, people go, that is fucking racist. To especially when, like when it's a lie is what makes it racist. But if people coming up from Morpeth, oh, you know, then the liberal left will try and find a way of agreeing with Nicola, won't they? No, she's all right. People from England, we are disgusting and diseased. Anyway, you know, going back to the Labour Party, there's been a few big moments in my life where the idea that they exclusively stand for good has been challenged. You know, the expenses scandal, where all the people that went to prison for that were Labour politicians, I think. All the people that did time for that, you know. They're supposed to be the good ones, and there they were with their hands in the till. I mean, Brexit as well for me, the fact that the party was supposed to represent the working classes, you know, just were ended up arguing for a second referendum and kind of ignoring the wishes of quite a decent chunk of their voters. And then we've got this. And maybe there are slightly more bastard Tory MPs on balance, but you're supposed to be the goodies. You're supposed to be the goodies. You trashed your own brand, man. It's like, it's that famous Mitchell and Webb sketch, isn't it, where David Mitchell's dressed up as a Nazi. And he says, sorry, are we the baddies here? It's a question like, you've always got to ask yourself, are we the baddies here? And the great thing about being right wing is that everyone already thinks you're the baddies. So like the only thing you could do is improve on that perception. You know, when people dislike me, you know, if I meet them and I'm anything less than a despicable bastard, I've outperformed my brand. Right? They're setting themselves up on a fucking plinth where they could only fall face first into the ground. And the problem is, right, is that Starmer's got to take action, isn't he? Old Keir Starmer, maybe he was the informer. Informer, Keir Starmer. but their vote, you know, he's got to take action, but he's got a problem because their vote currently, in a lot of polls, you'd think, you know, that they would be. And in fairness to the Corbynistas, if Corbyn hadn't been 10 points ahead during, you know, a pandemic and the way the government had handled it, the centrists would have been apoplectic. But Labour aren't getting above 40%. And I think the reason for that is that is because they've a lot of people that like to feel radical in terms of voting for Corbyn have already, they're going to splinter away to other parties, aren't they? Going to go, the new Black Lives Matter party. the Black Lives Matter? There's a Black Lives Matter party. There's a Green party. There's a Save the NHS party. There's a Women's party. I think this is what will happen now. We'll have a trans party. We'll have a kind of vegan party. It would just continually splinter, and it'll make it harder and harder for Labour to ever get a majority. Because one of the problems with Starmer, and it was kind of highlighted by Andy Burnham's passion and the way that people bought into that, is he doesn't make anybody feel anything, Starmer, does he? Like when he talks, you don't feel something. Like you look at like a lot of the, you know, people take the piss out of the strongmen leaders, but one of their successes is that they inspire something, a feeling in people. Whereas Keir Starmer, he doesn't make people feel anything other than smug. Okay, just a quick hype. Well, we've got some new £5 patrons, actually. We need to say hello to these legends of the game. Dave Duncan. I mean, like, if you're having a kid, go for alliteration. It never fails. Dave Duncan. It's old Dave Duncan. Who's going to forget Dave Duncan? Not only that, he's got two first names, which I always think is a massive shout. Dave Duncan, Daniel Connolly. Are there just loads of Daniel Connollys, Donnellys? Is this just me thinking this? Daniel Connolly and Amy Lindley. And Amy, great name, Amy. For some reason, there are some women's names that I always think imply a good-looking woman. Right? I'm not just trying to butter up late Amy because she's become a patron here. I don't know if like I've only ever known good-looking Amys. Megan is another one. She's always pretty Megans, you know what I mean? Moira's on the other hand. I'm joking. Look, if you're a Moira, there's nothing to stop. You wouldn't give that name. I mean, you look at a beautiful bouncing baby girl in 20, you know, fair enough if it was in the 80s, but now 2020, Moira, I mean, it's just not. I'm probably going to check my Patreon and find out. Three Moiras deleted their pledge. Just quickly, hyping stuff, really. I mean, the main thing is now, as we're probably hunkering down into this lockdown, any kind of Patreon action that you can give helps me with the podcast and stuff. And I'll be looking at in the next month. As I said, I'm already dropping the... I've said dropped again. Jeff, you're 43. Remember that. I've dropped the 20-minute... I didn't even mean to do that. Dropped the... Oh, my God, that was a hat-trick. That's how a hat-trick happens in cricket, right? The first one, you're not thinking about. The second one... is because you haven't even clocked the danger. And then the third one is just nerves, which is stumps splayed everywhere. I have put it on Patreon, the whole 20-minute lockdown set. So whenever you join, you'll be able to unlock that and all the previous content. I do have a couple of gigs left in the tour. You know, we've all got it in place for them to happen in Maidenhead and Shrewsbury. The venues should be in touch about how they're going to happen, because both of them had to split them over two showings to get people in. The Noughties, I was on a show called The Noughties on BBC, which is still on iPlayer, episode one, me, Ellie Taylor and Angela Scanlon. And yes, you're right, I was there to up the glam account. they look so glamorous, and then it's just me sitting in there, just sitting in my little beer gut. I had to have this pillow behind me, and I just felt, well, I felt fat, guys. I felt really fat. And also, it was recorded just as we were coming out of lockdown. So a lot of people say, well, this is a really basic format. But if they'd have released it immediately, everyone would have gone, what a great piece of lockdown telly. Thanks for getting this on, guys. But now everyone's going, everyone else is back in studios. Why are you sitting in a front room? But it was a lot of fun to make. And yeah, I did feel like just some electrician that had walked into their front room and just stayed for a chat. Just quick chat about men in schools, which sounds pervy, doesn't it? But just I wrote an article for the Times last week, and it was about the fact that there'd been a slump, there'd been a drop off of the amount of men, male teachers in secondary schools. And it was a slump, it was a drop of, some people pointed out, was like it was only a drop of 2%. You go, well, that's already starting from a low base when it comes to men in secondary schools. You know, you're talking, it was already 35. I think this took it legitimately under a third. Under a third. Men are actually a minority in schools. I think the first thing we need to talk about here is about special support groups, you know, safe spaces. Because you know, it's like, if you've ever worked in an office of predominantly women, I have, and I didn't respond well for it. Because I think there's only one or two ways a man can go in that situation, is you either assimilate, do you know what I mean? You start getting involved in like baking days. Oh my God, it's Kirsty's birthday. I'm doing the cakes. Or you double down and become more masculine because you're trying to sort of lay down a marker for how you refuse to change or evolve. I sort of went that way when I was teaching. I went and built myself an office on my own because I couldn't handle the gas bagging, to be honest, because we were in a very tiny office. And it was just this just sounds like I'm being sexist now. But like, even if you're a woman, if you've worked in an office where there was like 90% women, you know how it goes. It's the same as if it's like 90% blokes. It's going to get a bit fucking, you know, boisterous. It's just, balance is good. But we don't have them in secondary schools. And we already know that from primary schools, that are only 85% women and 15% men. And, you know, the argument that gets put across in both contexts is, well, you know, maybe men just don't care enough about kids, you know. You know, I think... Sorry, are you victim blaming here? Because in any other situation where women are a much smaller part of the workforce, it's always someone else's fault, isn't it? You know, in politics, because women are discouraged from being in politics. It's a toxic atmosphere. You know, maybe a lot of blokes find schools are like weirdly feminised these days. You know, a lot too much talking, not enough action. Maybe that. Maybe when it comes to politics, women aren't bothered enough. If we're going to do the victim blaming thing, maybe women should just... just stop worrying about your kids and get in the House of Commons, for fuck's sake. But, you know, what is it about the modern atmosphere that isn't as appealing to men? You know, it's another... I mean, one of the things now is, like, the amount of prep and wall displays. Or maybe that's always been a thing, but I don't know if this is a bloke thing, but I, as a teacher, I wasn't fantastic on the wall displays. I think it's fair to say that. I kind of thought, in my view, if you're spending time on wall displays, it's because you know you're compensating for something. Whereas my walls were blank, I was the display. I am the colour. I am the way. But I also think that they were like, you know, in terms of being a good male teacher, there were certain basics that you could take care of. And let's be honest, like how female teachers dress in school, they can just dress how they want. There's no one really, everyone's terrified to kind of speak to women about what they wear. But with male teachers, I just felt you had to keep it basic and go with at the very least shirt and tie, preferably a suit, all right? Because you drop below that level, kids, teenagers are fucking superficial, man. They're very led by, image, you know. And if you just got to go in there looking the part. And the other thing that I would never tolerate, because by the time I started teaching, a lot of the kids, instead of saying yes, sir, for the register, they would just go, here. And I was like, I did not go through my PGCE to just have someone given the most basic affirmation of presence within a physical environment. Let me tell you that. Here. Or just, yeah. No. Because when I saw that happening to other teachers, I felt embarrassed for them. Do you know what I mean? Like when they're just watching them get disrespected in their own classroom. I didn't know where to put my eyes. It was a bit like, you know, when you're like in Waitrose and you see like a middle class kid just kicking off and disrespecting their mum. I mean, if you got brought up in a solid working class background, you're just embarrassed. Do you see how a kid's calling his mum a bitch? You ever seen kids doing that? Your mum, why can't I have Frosties, you bitch? And the mum's like, now come on, Eli. Now come on, Eli. No, you're such a bitch. I hate you, you big bitch. I remember once I was around my mate's house and he called his mum a swine. That was weird. Isn't that weird? I was only about 8. And I just remember a swine. I was shocked that he insulted his mum. And I was also shocked that he used like such a weird word. But being called sir is a perk of the job, you know? It's a perk of the job. Yes, sir. People have to call you sir. You know, I was earning in the low 20s and I got called sir. What other job would you get that in? You know, the head teacher would come in. She was like a very senior, you know, she's a woman. She was on six figures. You know, she was a big community figure. She had to come and go, excuse me, sir. I was like, yes, miss. How cool is that? I remember, even after school, I don't know if I mentioned this before, but I had an ex-student. This is about 10 years after I'd finished teaching. And he saw me in town and he was like, now you're not my teacher. I can call you Jeff. I was like, no, call me sir. Okay, you will always call me Sir Aaron. And he was with his missus as well and his kids. And I was like, no, I'm sorry, there's standards here. It's like being president, you know what I mean? They always have to be called Mr. President after that. And the problem, this is one of the problems with teaching, is that as a man, you're expected to work your whole life, aren't you? It's an unbroken stream. And it's not like women that can just, you know, piss about having kids, which, as we all know, is a complete DOS, right? Just what, for gonna get in the pyjamas, put a DVD on this. If you listen to this as a couple, how much of an argument did I just cause then? If you're listening to this as a couple and you're the man and you just laughed at that, well, good luck for the next 20 minutes. If you finish school and then become a teacher in reasonably good time, you're just gonna spend your whole life in a school, you know. And then if you want to earn any kind of money out of it, you've got to, like, because you can get up to like the top of the pay scale. You can earn good money as a classroom teacher, you know, certainly by national standards. But if you're somebody that really wants to earn serious cheddar, right, and somebody who's maybe fixated on getting to six figure territory, you know, you got to be a deputy head or head. And you go, that is a big, like, that's such a responsible position, you know, certainly from the way I viewed it when I was a kid, a deputy head, a head teacher. And you just sort of think back through your life and you think about all the things you've done and all the kind of mischief you've got into. You go, yeah, I don't think maybe I'm the guy to perhaps be the moral and spiritual guide for 1,500 kids. So, look, I just think, look, I hope this isn't controversial, but I think we need to take, you know, profound action. Boys need male role models in school, and I think it's not unreasonable, you know, in the same way that we've had quotas to increase female participation and, you know, and women getting better pay settlements to close the gender pay gap, I think that male teachers should be paid more. I think that's completely reasonable. I think we should have an advert. If you go into teaching now as a man, I mean, you're certainly not an English teacher, if that's your use of language, you could get paid up to 10% more. Teaching, it pays more when you've got balls. Just a little one here about Sam Smith. So he, you know, Sam Smith, they is a good bloke. They is such a cool singer. I mean, that's how he likes referring to himself. So he's gender neutral. That's Sam Smith's thing. You know the singer, right? He's done well to become that successful with like such a mundane name as Sam Smith, isn't he? I mean, Elton John, Madonna, Freddie Mercury, Sam Smith. But there's a headline in the Metro that said that Sam Smith says they want to be mummy to future kids as they address struggles of changing pronouns. It's really difficult. Like, I don't know about you, but look, Sam Smith can call himself whatever the fuck he wants, but I feel sorry for grammar. I can't tell what the subject and the object of that sentence is. Sam Smith says they want to be mummy. So he, in old money, I'm not misgendering fucking pronoun in him, but just to make it understandable to the people listening to my podcast. Sam Smith wants to be mummy to future kids. Why don't you just keep repeating Sam Smith just to make him feel ridiculous? As Sam Smith, but the fact is, it's future kids as they address struggles. That means that I now think that we're talking about the kids in this. So sorry if this is just making it more confusing to listen to, but I often think, you know, with political correctness, if one of the objectives is to make lasting change in society, right? It's like we did with, you know, homosexuality. I'm sure that there are still some fairly homophobic granddads out there. But largely, the argument was won with society, wasn't it, right? The granddad test. This is, will this make any sense to the oldest member of your family? If you read that out, they would just be staring at you. The third time of reading, they'd be going, what's going on here? What are you? You're doing the crack, are you, boy? Are you on the crack? You're doing the crack? You know, I'm sure people are doing their own crack-related jokes there. I'll let you do those. You know, this is a team game. But, you know, he. The thing about Sam Smith is they decry normal gender norms, right? That's what they say. I can't do it. It doesn't make sense. But then why does he need to identify? Why does Sam Smith need to identify as mummy or daddy in that case? How can you be so progressive that you fly past gender norms, you know, you reject gender norms. And then when it comes to being a parent, you're like, I'll be mummy. I mean, that's the ultimate gender norm, isn't it? It's the ultimate gender norm. But, you know, the thing is, I don't know if you can. I think being a mother is arguably a genetic thing. I know that's a crazy old-fashioned attitude that I'm putting out there, but I kind of do, you know. I think that mothers have unique genetic qualities, which, as we all know, help them be good mothers. Like, you know, they have certain antiseptic saliva that they can clean your face with. That is, right? That's a thing that only mothers have. They can cut hair without formal training. You know, they just see your hair long and they think, I'm fucking cut that. That is something that you cannot train that into a person. So look, if Sam Smith is they want to be mummy, then they should be mummy. But he, as in me, wishes to they still be daddy. Okay, we've got a couple of letters to do here. Hi, Jeff. Loving the podcast, as always. My question for it this week is it bad that I'm secretly hoping for tighter lockdown restrictions? Yes, Paul, in York. Not even reading on. You people that love a bit of lockdown. I mean, that's the point where I'm at, where I'm like, I understand the arguments for lockdown. I don't understand the fucking enthusiasm. Do you know what I mean? Who's like, yeah, you know, it's actually, you know, The Mandalorian's about to drop on Disney Plus. I actually wouldn't mind. Oh, yeah, good. Well, I'm sure you're on a fucking fixed counselling term. Anyway, let's do Paul the courtesy of reading on. So I don't have to pretend to enjoy spending time with people who I'd secretly like to tell us to shut the fuck up. This is about Christmas, right? I get it. If the family forces me to break the rules because it's Christmas, would I be going too far by calling the police? Well, that's pretty funny. That's pretty funny. Like, if you're that anti-spending, I imagine this is an in-laws thing, Paul. I don't know. And I probably shouldn't have said you're in York here, because that narrows it down to a dangerous degree. Would you? Yeah, I mean, like, call in the old Bill. Who's the snitch? I was thinking, you know, there was that headline in the Daily Mail this week about the police kind of busting in on your Christmas. Can you imagine the scene? All right, everybody, fucking get down. Fucking get down. Get down. Like, your nan fucking bent over, like, the buffet, you know what I mean? Face down in some fucking cheese and pineapple, like little wooden sticks going in her eyes. I'm blind. And then, like, your little nephew trying to nick the taser off the copper. I mean, that would make a good board game, wouldn't it? I often think that board games lack a bit of jeopardy. Tell the coppers to stay, get the drinks out, and let's all play a game of Monopoly that involves tasering. Instead of, you know, they go, you go to jail, do not pass go, do not play, go to jail and get tasered. I think that is kind of like the Monopoly that we all need. That's funny, Paul. That is funny. It's a good idea. And then following the back of that, I had another letter from Martin where the gist of it was to He basically said, tell the police that you've been burgled and that can guarantee that they won't show up at your house for at least 3 weeks. I think I absolutely see where you're coming from with that. One of the letters this week is from AR. It just says AR. Sorry if you actually put your name there. It says, slightly off topic, but as man of the people, that's absolutely my brand, you're increasingly appearing on topical shows such as Question Time and LBC's Cross Questions, which, by the way, is a really good chat on Ian Dale's show. It should still be up there. So just have a look back and listen to that. It was a good chat. I think what I and perhaps a lot of people want to know is what it's like, i.e. being on these kind of shows. What are the people like? Are they smooth, in control, or well briefed, or running around with their hair on fire? Is it the West Wing or is it Veep? Well, definitely more at the Veep end. And is there tension behind the scenes or laughter and GNTs? So the first thing is, I should say, is so the first experience I had of that was literally Question Time, which is a bit kind of in at the deep end. And it kind of took me back by, we're in the green room beforehand, it was with James Cleverly, who's a really nice bloke. He gets stick on social media. I think he's just a nice bloke. Angus Robertson, the then leader of the SNP in the House of Commons, who's a bit long-winded, but a very nice man, like a genuinely nice man. There's a journalist called Fleet Street Fox and stuff, and David Dimbleby. And it is a bit like, you're right, like people having GNTs, and it was the smiles before the snarls. And maybe it ruins the illusion, but politicians do broadly get on all right. But then Diane Abbott was on as well. And it wasn't quite the same vibe when Diane came in, it's fair to say. And anyone that saw me on Question Time with Diane Abbott will know that we did run into a bit of beef as it went on. They are really nervous, do you know what I mean? Because now, and I do, I like politicians, I like working with them, I like working with people in politics and in political coverage on television. There's a real energy about it that's different from comedy in a way. But basically, they know that if they fuck up, like, you know, they're doing 200,000 views on Twitter. Like, as a politician, every single time you're on one of the mainstream political shows, you're just on Twitter, just refresh trending. Because the moment you say something, you know, you're just trying to talk and think of an answer. And meanwhile, some shit comes out of your mouth. Like, they're talking about free school meals. And you're kind of, well, the thing about these people, and then you're trying to keep talking, and you're going, did I just say these people? I mean, these people on benefit. I mean, oh, that sounds, should I double down or should I explain that? And explain it? Would that make it worse? And then meanwhile, you're trying to make your next point, and that's coming out like absolute fucking gobbledygook. So I do have a lot of sympathy for them. There are certain people that is just impressive. So I was on Cross Questions with Brandon Lewis, and he's just across the detail. He won't be drawn on stuff. He absolutely knows what he's doing. I think that there are some politicians who are a bit chaotic in their replies. Some people that don't send out much charisma. Like when I was on Question Time with Rebecca Long Bailey, yeah, she's perfectly nice. Good morning, Mrs. Long Bailey. But there was no charisma coming out of her at all. And so when she went on, this was like 2 years after that, when she went on to be in contention to be leader of the Labour Party, I was just like, fucking hell. She actually got a third of the vote. A third of people thought, good morning, Mrs. Long Bailey. I mean, like, if leading the country had involved kind of like having like an activity fully set up in the morning with prit sticks and scissors, and I think she's your woman. And yeah, but you know, you compare that to then when I was on with Lisa Nandy, who, you know, she can be quite a spiky personality, but she, you know, she gets it out there. Do you know what I mean? She's on the front foot and she's quite charismatic. One person that really surprised me in terms of his general vibe was Jacob Rees-Mogg, who is really humble. And I know, like, lefties listen to this, you're not going to want to hear this, but he was like, he's really nice. And he's got this sort of stoop about him that suggests that he was never quite good enough for father. And he was like, so when I arrived at Question Time, I was like, you're all right. I just try and speak to people like normal people. I was like, all right, Jake, you fucking skinny cunt. I was like, all right, how's it going? I said, busy day. You know what I mean? Like, and he was like, yes, I had to go home, you know, bath the kids and get them out. And he's just reminded that these people are normal people. And then, you know, fast forward into 30 minutes into Question Time, he's given some answer about the Boer War, in which he accidentally seemed to imply that concentration camps weren't always bad. So it sort of loops back to my original point of how people can get themselves in trouble. But the point I'm making is that, you know, I really enjoy being on political type shows. I enjoy doing Times Radio and stuff like that. So increasingly I'm thinking, you know, that might be like part of where my home is. Because the thing about political shows, with comedy shows, they would have balance reluctantly. They'd have to be dragged kicking and screaming towards balance, whereas political shows have balance built into them. And that's where, how I like to work. I really do genuinely want to hear all sides of the argument. Is that right? That's the end of the show. Was that last bit a bit boring? I'm sorry, I really gave, you know, I was asked the question, I gave like a full and thorough answer. Maybe that's why politicians do fuck about all the time. It's best to just give a short piece of bollocks than a full answer. But yeah, this is the end of the show this week. We just got some reviews to do, not before we've said thank you to our new £3 patrons, which is Andrew Cresswell. I just feel like I know an Andrew Cresswell. Do I know Cressers? Andy, it's got to be Andy Cresswell, isn't it? Because, yeah, that scans a bit better. Or maybe you should have gone with a little alliteration like Dave Duncan. You should have gone with Colin Cresswell. See, immediately that's working better, isn't it? We've got Ben Amundsen. Look, Ben, man, that's a decent... But that's clunky, man. Andy Amundsen. I just think everybody should have alliterative names. Andy Amundsen. You could swap names, couldn't you? You could have Andrew Cresswell's first name. He could be Ben Cresswell, works nicely. Andy Amundsen. You guys get in touch, have a little name swap. And then just Sam. I didn't have your surname, Sam. But thank you all for being part of the Patreon community. Maybe you should have, you know, your own safe space, right? So a few reviews here. I haven't checked these. Let's see what we've got. So if you leave a 5-star review on iTunes, I'll definitely read it out. For a while now, this is from Shitality. For a while now, I've struggled to find any other form of entertainment that fits roughly with my views, so I'm very glad that I stumbled across this. Normal people are underrepresented as they do not have the time to produce a sheer volume of whining and virtue signalling that the wokies do. Jeff articulates and represents with great humour what a lot of normal people are thinking. Thanks for addressing the balance, Jeff. Matt from Watford. My pleasure, sir. Really enjoying to listen. This one's quite a long one, so I'll just read a bit of this from Paul Salad. Really enjoy listening to Jeff's take on the world. While I don't agree with many of his points of views, I do understand better the genesis of arguments from the right. Informed, funny, and tons of material to poke and prod a reaction. It's a breath of fresh air. Cheers, mate. Thank you very much for that, Paul Salad. Tommy Taxi. Is this just one person making up ridiculous names? Tommy Taxi. I live in Island. Born and raised. Lives with cannibals. I live in Island. I was born and raised working class, just in case you confuse me with the liberal elite. Thoroughly enjoy the pod, and I rate and recommend the podcast. You're welcome. Thank you. Bertronosaurus. This is funny, insightful, and down to earth. I've listened to all of the WMPT podcasts and loved every single episode, particularly interviews with Alistair Williams, Andrew Doyle, etc., and the men's mental health bits. Thanks you for your review. Before reading out the next one, I just want people to know I secretly love falafel and public pumpkin lattes. Well, get the fuck out then, frankly. We don't need that filth around here, for God's sake. This is from the DX. This is my Friday drive home listen. Consistently insightful and funny. Good guests. And Jeff Steele, I think, has the voice of what most people think, if people I talk to are anything to go by. Two things, though. Will his body hold out to see us through the next few years with his common sense? It's very true. And two, he has killed my ability to hear the name Keir Starmer in any other way than he uses it on the podcast. Well, we've already had a Keir Starmer this week, haven't we? You're not saying I'm going to go back and play. This is from Alan. I have been on the political left all my life today. Wokeness comes along and the political left moves so far that I become right of centre. And I now find myself listening to comedians such as yourself. Result. There you go, Labour Party. If you want to know what went wrong at last election, you might want to have a little chat with Alan. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 44. This is from Chilton's Ian. Jeff Norcott deftly balances his easy charm with mild offence. That is going on the poster. Mate, easy charm with mild offence. Everyone likes to be mildly offended. Makes you feel alive, doesn't it? Unlike some other political comedians, Jeff never forgets to be funny first, political second. Well, thanks for mentioning that, Ian. That is part of the point. Thank you, Jeff, for making this podcast weekly. It's a winning format. Well, look, that is the point. Since we had lockdown, started the Patreon, it's weekly. You know, it looks like we're going down lockdown road again. If you want to keep old Jeff, you know, in kind of... In bacon rolls and that, then you might want to throw a few quid on the old patron. If you don't want to do that, then maybe recommend the podcast. You know, well, maybe if he has a tour coming up next year, wink, wink, that might be announced soon, or even maybe you might be writing something that you might be able to buy, then, throw a few quid. If you're doing the pure Cockney, you have to roll your R's. Throw a few quid his way. Anyway, cheers for listening. See you next week.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.